and welcome to the Deuce. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Brad.
And we are here this week to talk about, Brad, why don't you tell us what we're going to talk about?
Well, is the number two. This is our number two episode of the Deuce, so a deuce of a deuce.
Ooh.
And this one is my pick, which is very important to us. It is Short Circuit 2. It is kind of what got us going on all this Deuce madness. I think you bought me a poster of Short Circuit 2.
Yeah, I think it was for, I don't remember if it was your birthday
Christmas,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, I got you a Short Circuit 2
and
poster.
So we decided to frame that and put other Deuce movies, and we actually have them framed in our apartment, and they lead up to go to the bathroom, so you can drop a deuce while looking at deuces.
Yeah, follow the deuces.
So, your deuce. So speaking of dropping the deuce, we are going to drop the deuce with Short Circuit 2. And here we go. So we're going to give you the plot. Oh, do you want to tell us a little bit about our podcast?
Yeah. So just for those of you who maybe haven't heard the first episode yet, first off, please go back and do so. We will wait. But also, just as a reminder of what we're doing here, so on the Deuce, we're covering sequels. Must be just the number two movie in the series, so we're not going beyond that or prequels or doing anything crazy like that. And we aren't necessarily, you're probably not going to hear some of the big boys on here like Temple or Empire, things like that, just because they've gotten plenty of love and coverage. I mean, when's the last time that you waxed philosophic over Short Circuit 2?
Tuesday. Last Tuesday.
Well, yeah, we did, of course. I mean, that's a little bit different, you know. That's our bag. So,
if you haven't watched Short Circuit 2, go ahead and pause if you want to follow along. And go ahead and watch it. You can watch it on streaming. All the streaming services are renting it for $2.99.
Yeah, all the ones you can pay for it through
Google Play, Amazon.
And there's a relatively new streaming service, I believe, that's come out from San Diego Comic-Con or one of their partners, where they kind of focus on, quote, nerd movies. And this is one of them that you can stream through there.
So you can stream it free for 7-day trial.
Yeah, so. But then after that, it's, you know, you pay for the...
So go ahead and pause this if you want to watch it, but now it's time to drop it. It's time to drop Short Circuit 2.
Drop that deuce.
Here we go. So we're going to start with Ben from the first movie, played by Fisher Stevens. And Ben is an Indian, and when we mean Indian... We mean dots, not feathers, correct?
Yeah, and an interesting one at that, considering Fisher Stevens is far from.
Yeah, the big elephant in the room is Fisher Stevens is a Caucasian male in real life playing an Indian. So we are dealing with a curry-faced actor here in this movie. I mean, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He... supposedly it was...
Johnny Five's alive. Yeah.
It's pretty cringeworthy to
it's
watch
It's pretty
it.
Cringeworthy.
But you know what? And the thing is, he's not trying to do it as any kind of like offensive
so.
Or
yeah.
stupid. It's like, you know, he was trying to make the best of a bad situation, I think. And I think that's what Oscar Award winner Fisher Stevens is doing.
He is an Oscar winner, produces a bunch of documentaries.
But I think, and it was... I think you told me about it. So the story went that originally, it was supposed to be a white guy, and then they flipped it on him. We're like, can you do an Indian
right.
impression? And he was like, and he was just kind of starting out in the business
right.
and stuff, so he felt like, you know, he needed to do it and didn't see anything wrong with it at the time and has since been like, wow, I can't believe I did that.
Well, I think they initially wanted him, it was going to be a white guy, and then they made the character Indian, fired him, hired Bronson Pinchot.
Oh, that's true, yes.
And then fired Bronson Pinchot and brought back Fisher Stevens to do the Indian. So Fisher Stevens' character, Benjamin, is on the streets of New York selling toy versions of Johnny Five, correct?
Yeah.
And he is right next to Michael McKean,
yeah.
who plays Fred Ritter. And he's a panhandler
yeah.
that is selling Rolex watches.
Now, and Ben in all this is selling Johnny Five. He says he's selling sophisticated robots.
Yes.
For $19.99 each.
Yes.
If somebody's offering you a sophisticated robot for $19.99, they are lying to you.
They are lying.
I think it was the sophisticated workout equipment I got for $19.99 was a shake weight.
Oh, the beginning of the movie isn't that. The beginning of the movie is there's an airplane that flies through. And lands, and there's a big security hall.
But they show. They just oddly cut away from it, so you don't know why they show that at all. It's very awkward.
And then we meet Fisher Stevens' character, Ben, and Fred, and they're on the street. They don't know each other, but they're like neighbors in their selling boutiques. And we follow one of the toys gets away and goes into a department store. And I say that they follow Johnny Five in a department store. No one cares that there's a small robot just coming through the department store.
And like wrecking up the joint. Right,
causing a mess. And the robot itself has cat-like reflexes. Like it falls off multiple counters and just lands perfectly and just zooms around the perfume and then goes to the women's dressing room.
It's a sophisticated robot.
And the opening credits kind of follow the robot that way. And then we see the heroine kind of our movie, Sandy, and she is a toy designer who is looking for like the next It toy, right?
Yeah, and you know, really, and you see a lot of, I've kind of got nostalgic in this scene because you see a lot of, in the background, like there's a Mr. Robot toy and there's or whatever it's called. And then there was a, she had one of those, like, I think they used to call them like spider riders, whatever. It was like a, it was a thing, but your hand was the legs of the spider or like the bee or whatever it was, where your little action figure rode on it. And so she had one of those and he's, yeah, of course, damning her for all this and saying it's terrible stuff.
Right. And Sandy is played by Cynthia Gibbs. I said she looks like Elizabeth Short got stepped on by a horse. Or not Elizabeth Short, but Elizabeth Shue got like stepped on by a horse. That's what she looks like to me. Do you know what I mean?
She does look like a poor man's Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah, she's
Elizabeth Sandal.
Like Elizabeth Flip Flop.
Elizabeth Croc.
And she sees this toy, and she's like, wow, this is the best. I'm going to pull ahead of my department if I can get who designed this. And she follows the toy outside, meets Ben, and she says, oh, my God, this is the best toy. I need, like, can you produce, mass produce 1,000 robots for me? And, of course, he's like, oh, no, I can't do that. I just work out of my truck.
And
go ahead.
In the meantime, too, he's like calculating out like how long it would take to do it. Using his touch tone calculator,
like Texas Instrument calculator.
Well, it's like he's touching it and it's making phone sounds like beeping when he's doing it. It's completely bizarre.
Oh no, it is. And Fred, the Michael McKean character, overhears. them talking, and it was like, of course we can do it. And all of a sudden he tries to like scam his way into being a partner with Ben in order to like build all these robots because he just sees money
there. You know, there was this, and when he's talking with him about this, I wrote this down because I was like, holy cow. Michael McKean asks him if he's fresh off the banana boat.
Oh yeah,
and
right?
It was like the I just wrote down. It's like the filmmakers doubled down on Fisher Stevens' brown face.
And also, like once they end the transaction and they're kind of like, yeah, we can totally do 1,000 robots. Sandy shakes Ben's hand, and I said that Fisher Stevens shakes hands like Donald Trump. Like, he just did not want to let go of the hand. He was like, oh, yes, we can do it.
Jerked her shoulder out of socket.
Right. And I think, like, there's a joke that I actually thought was kind of funny. I don't know why. He says, do you know what capital is? And he says, yes, Washington, D.C. Which I don't know why that was funny. So then we cut to a next scene that is the guy from the airplane stops in to this bank. Well, first of all, he has like a handcuff around and carrying.
Yeah, and he's surrounded like by men in gray suits with shotguns because, you know, that's what you do.
So he's actually carrying a diamond like collection called the Vanderville or Vanderver collection.
Yeah,
that he's gonna keep at the bank. That just happens to be across from where Ben and Fred decide they're going to put their shop, correct? Yeah.
And so Fancy Boss Hog lets them know.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's wearing an all white suit and everything.
Yeah.
Fancy Boss Hog tells them that he's only going to be there for a limited amount of time. Mm-hmm. And as he's talking to all these people, including. You know, famous character actor Jack Weston.
Jack Weston. This is Jack Weston's last movie.
Yeah,
that he ever
his
made.
Last movie. It's a way to go out. The but you might remember him from movies like The Incredible Mr. Limpet, and he was in
Wait Until Dark.
Yeah, Wait Until Dark. He was great in that. But yeah, so check those things out if you.
So
haven't.
He like owns the bank and he sees like dollar signs because he wants to steal these jewels for himself because they're like $30 million or whatever. So Ben and Fred, Fred takes Ben out and says, "Hey, I've rented this building that is just a complete dump." And then, so they're going to say, we're going to base our operation out of this abandoned building. So he's like, come inside. Here's the building. And then the building is just equipped with about, I don't know, I want to say 50 some homeless people. Like, it just comes equipped with it.
Well, they weren't there to begin with.
Oh, no, but like, they walk in and then there they are.
Yeah, well, there were mannequins everywhere first.
Oh, yeah.
And so I assume they came to life after they put hats on them. And they came to life afterwards. And they, at some point, though, I mean, Fred does. He walks in with tons of homeless people who all have degrees from MIT.
Right.
And
obviously.
Fred is the real hero of this movie.
Oh.
I mean, he's employing the homeless. He's getting
really
them back
is.
On their feet. Yeah. And he promised them McDonald's, I think was what he had said he was going to do.
They're going to work for McDonald's for Chicken McNuggets and whatnot. And meanwhile, there's evidently two crooks that are tunneling down below from the building that Ben and Fred are working.
Yeah.
Working in.
And they banked on this on this obscure Car 54 gimmick where they're gonna tunnel from one place into the building next door. Yeah, and so they're
surprised that all of a sudden all these people are here. Like, there's bums here and people working.
Well, they said earlier that it was gonna be torn down in 2 months.
Right.
And so he got a lease for just the month.
Right.
So that's why they didn't think anybody'd be there. And of course, you know, then they're saying, oh man, we don't have time to get over here. You know, we have to keep working continuously. Now we're going to have these interruptions. And I wrote, the one guy goes, do you want to go back to your 2-bit computer scam? Huh? Huh? Written for like, it sounded like it was like out of some like weird, like 30 mobsters movie.
Well, it was just weird in general. They just cut down and like they're burrowing in this tunnel. And they don't know that
it's like a giant metal door.
It
on
looks
tracks.
Like a
it looks like a
Hogan Hero subplot. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Where they're just kind of burrowing in. Well, so the crooks are like, we can't get any work done if these people are here. So they decide to dress up like they're from like the Purge, right? Like,
yeah.
That's what I put with stocking caps. And decide to come in and ruin all the equipment and all the progress that Fred and Ben and the Bums, which, by the way, is my band name, Fred, Ben, and the Bums.
Yeah. and they scare away all the bums and everything.
And they scare away. And then I think I put, Fred says to Ben, don't worry, I can get a new staff. like Fred has a bunch of like bums just lined up along the way.
He probably has a loyal army of them of the homeless just waiting to come in. He's doing great work by employing people.
And so they're like, Fred and Ben, especially Ben, they're like, what are we going to do? We have all these robots that we need to make for this toy company. And so in is our hero, Johnny Five, comes in, right?
Yeah, there's a, so right after the crooks leave, then somebody's like, I have a package to leave.
Yeah, like out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm sure the guy just watched them run away and was like, package delivery. But he has a package. They don't know who it is, so they say to leave it outside.
Right. And it says they say that Stephanie and Newton from the first movie, played by the Goo.
This is already like the third time they've name dropped right. Newton.
There's
Stephanie.
Exposition. They're like, hey, these are the people from the first movie that you loved, but aren't going to be in this movie.
Right.
But we're gonna. Hey, this is all connected. And so, Johnny Five is actually in this big gigantic crate that Stephanie and Newton decided to ship off to them. I actually put that. I think that they were just annoyed by Johnny Five and they wanted some alone time. And they're like, just send it to Ben. I think he's in New York.
Yeah.
So then Johnny Five decides to break out of this crate. And he's like, all these package peanuts. Like, I don't know how many package peanuts are in this freaking thing, but right. it's just packed. And he's like, hey, Ben, it's me, Johnny Five.
And when he comes out, I mean, he comes out.
Right. He looks like.
He's covered with like rainbow stickers. Oh, and he's got a red handkerchief on.
A gay handkerchief with rainbow stickers is exactly what I put.
Yeah.
Decides, and Johnny Five just like, what's going on? Oh my God, this is crazy. And goes around their workspace. And
Like at this point, like he's starting to move around and look at things. And right. like his eyes are. The puppetry in this is fantastic.
Right. Like it's 1988. They're not using special effects, it's all right. practical effects. It's wonderful. So they decide that they're going to have Johnny Five make all these robots to help him out. When the thieves return, because they're like, what's going on? They see a big gigantic robot and they're like, we have to stop this because we need to burrow our tunnel because our boss wants right. us to, you know, succeed.
Well, at this point too, they've also made a point to say, you can't let Johnny know that he's in the city.
Right.
Because then he's going to want personal freedoms right. and things like that. And we can't let that happen.
So the two crooks come back and they decide that they're going to try to beat up Johnny or whatnot, just to stop him from doing. So they're on their stocking caps and they're, I think one has an axe, one has like a, I don't know what the other one has, like a baseball bat or something.
No, he just has like a crowbar.
Like a crowbar. Yeah. And Johnny stops them from, spins them around.
He does this crazy... he did the same thing he normally does. Electronic shop, crazy whoever, you know, like routine. And it's actually really fun with the kind of Dutch angles they keep doing right. up to him while it's happening.
And the thieves run away. They're scared. They're like, what are we going to do? And, you know, and meanwhile, Sandy has her deadline that they need, but, somehow, I think Fred says that, hey, we're in the big city.
Yeah.
And so Johnny's like, oh, no. Well, like, Fred treats him like a slave to begin with.
Yeah.
You're my robot slave. Go get me my slippers. Go get me my beer. And so that happens. And then Johnny finds out that he's in the city. So he's like, oh, crap, I got to go explore. I've never been to a city before. So Johnny decides to go to the city. Go ahead. I lost track there.
I will say that, Johnny's obviously a tourist. He's doing all the same things that I right. do when I'm in the city, where I'm like, whoa, hello, how are you?
But and
like
talking to people. It's kind of like, who are you? What is this thing? This lady has a dead animal on. Yeah. Like, I'm like... haven't you read through all these books though before?
Yeah, like, I'm like, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm, and people are less alarmed than I think they would normally be. Like, I mean, if you saw it today, even though the technology is probably more practical today, you'd still be like, what the hell? That Roomba came to life.
No one really gives a shit that Johnny Five's just running around.
Right.
In fact, people are kind of like, whatever, and people are rude to him. And except for one man who just happens to be Oscar, who is the bank guy. So obviously Oscar befriends Johnny. And so that kindredship comes clear.
Now, before we got to that point, though, we have one of the highlights, I think, which was he runs into Los Locos.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about that.
So all of a sudden, not by any prompting of Johnny, all of a sudden we get like gang members jumping out in a line who look like they were rejects from the movie The Warriors.
Oh, right.
And they're singing as they jump out and they say, I'm sure you can all say it along with me. Los Locos kick your butt. Los Locos kick your face. Los Locos kick your balls into outer space.
Which is poetry.
Yeah, right, it is. There. But not enough gangs have theme songs.
It's true. I also forever thought they were saying Los Lobos.
That's what I thought they were saying, too.
Like the guys that covered the La Bamba song are going to kick your ass.
It makes sense.
Like I was like, okay.
I believe it.
And then I'm like, how dumb are these guys, by the way? Like, one of them says, oh, what is that? And he goes, well, I think it's a Mitsubishi.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like...
Yeah, I think that's right.
Aren't you car... Like, don't you steal cars?
Or like a Toshiba or something like that. Yeah, it's a computer. It looks like a computer, right?
I'm like, whatever.
Computers with tank treads.
Whatever.
But then they... So they trick poor Johnny...
Right.
Into
stealing...
Stealing car stereos.
Which, and again, I'm like, wouldn't input tell you, like, have you not read The Outsiders? Like, do you not know what a gang is?
Yeah, right. But by the time he meets up with Jack Weston then,
right,
he is now even more rainbow.
Oh, yeah, right.
He's now been painted.
The Los Locos decide to tag them with gay tie-dye rainbow.
Yeah, and he's now wearing a leather vest. And so he's... He's a rough trick.
So they explain to him, they're like, Johnny, you can't do that. You're stealing. I think Fred at one point says, do you have fingerprints? And I'm like, no, you idiot. He's a robot. Like, obviously he doesn't have fingerprints.
Right.
Like, that's just stupid. So I'm like, whatever. So at this point, Fred learns that actually Johnny's worth a lot of money. In fact, he's worth $11 million. So he tries to sell Johnny. So he takes Johnny out to the city to try to sell him. But then Johnny escapes.
Also, by the way, they're walking down. I don't know if you noticed. They were walking down the street holding hands.
Oh, yeah.
Michael McKean's holding his hand as they're going.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is completely innocent. But given everything up to that point, it just made me crack up.
Well, and then I thought it was funny. They went to the world's biggest bookstore. And I was like.
It did not look that big.
No. I think your coffee shop bookstore is bigger than that. I actually put that Johnny is a walking Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, that was actually Johnny's last name.
So, Johnny 5 Wikipedia. So, Ritter tries to sell them, Johnny 5, to... who's he selling them to again?
It's some sort of tech company.
I didn't really get their name. Like, it was just kind of like, blah. And they're like, oh no, that can't be one of the Nova... robots.
Yeah, they were like, he was an engineer for Nova Robotics.
Right. And so Johnny gets all scared, backs up, and then breaks out of a window and starts to fall.
Well, he starts talking about, like, you can't sell me. You can't sell another sentient being.
Basically.
Because that would make me a slave.
Right.
You don't own me. And this businesswoman,
our
secretary goes, that's all we need, a robot that's into equal rights.
Right.
And even the businessman who was with her was like, why would you say that?
Gross. Ooh. And so Johnny's falling out the window, and then all of a sudden he Inspector Gadgets a hang glider out of the back of his toolbox thing. Like, I'm like, he has so many new tricks in this movie.
Yeah, and then, like, and that leads to weird monologues about dreaming about being a bird. Like, yeah. He's just... They have to do something to fill the time while he's hang gliding around
the
city. So
then the movie becomes pretty much Johnny Five lost in New York. Short Circuit 2 lost in New York. So it goes around. And he actually gets a new wardrobe, which is just basically a big stocking cap and a huge, gigantic trench coat. It looks like it came from the David Byrne collection. Like, you know how, like, yeah. David Byrne from the Talking Heads.
Yeah, he looks like one of the brothers from Strange Brew.
Right, he does. Yeah,
like, he looks like, well, and it's fitting. It was filmed in Ontario, so they probably were right. Just like, give us your trench coat and your toque.
And your toque. And your toque. And we're good to go. Right, it's supposed to be in New York, but it's shot in Toronto. So then he actually passes a church, and it says, do you have questions? Come in for answers. So then he's all like, ooh, I need answers. And he sees someone come out of a confessional booth. Johnny decides, oh, these must be where the answers are at. So he goes in, and on the other side is a priest, which you said, hey, look. That's the guy.
Yeah, it was the guy from
Fraggle Rock. The guy that owned the dog.
Yeah, explained why he kept calling Johnny Five Sprocket.
Right, actually thing. Said, "Be careful, Johnny Five. The guy from Fraggle Rock is going to check out your sprockets. So be careful. He's going to touch them. So what? So." He says, no, you can't. He realizes it's a robot, and he says, you get out of here. And
yeah, he was all about helping him until he realized he was different.
Right.
And then he chased him out.
Right. Right, I guess so. So then the cops find Johnny, and they decide to arrest him. Well, at first, they're...
So the cop was like, all right, whoever it is who's running this thing, come out here. We want to talk to you. And Johnny says, I am out. Here I am. Just furthering.
At one time he says, yeah, I'm human. Don't arrest me. I'm human, right? Or something
like
that. Yeah,
because he's in disguise.
And he says, my wife is Morgan Fairchild.
Yeah, I would see my wife, my kids, and my wife, Morgan Fairchild.
Which I'm like, what was this script written by an 80-year-old man?
Yeah, of course it was.
Whatever.
And then the cop with... Probably would have who has the award for the gayest mustache in the film. He like opens up the trench coat and it's like yelling at Johnny Five's crotch, like for some reason during the whole thing. This trench coat too. It's awkward, right? Like
right.
It's awkwardly huge. Like the shoulders are like 7 feet wide to accompany his for his frame, but then like the neck hole is really tiny.
Right. I don't understand.
It's like
that.
He got this off of like. He was like, oh, hey, you know, there's three kindergartners stacked on each other's shoulders trying to get into an R-rated movie. Can I please have your trench coat?
So the police take him away, book him. There's a mugshot of Johnny Five and place him in the stolen goods warehouse, which are later claimed by Johnny, correct? When do they have their date? Don't they have their date?
It's like right after that.
Okay.
Because they have this, kind of... like discussion about loneliness.
Oh yeah. There's a heart to heart that Ben and Johnny Five have about loneliness, which ends with a give me five. Oh, give me three. Which is very funny.
Yeah, there was a great scene before this too, like very subtle kind of. But so by this point, the whole reason that Ben is looking for Johnny was because Fred tells him. I lost Johnny. I tried to sell him. And Ben's pissed at this. And there's this, like, Fisher Stevens does this great thing while they're talking. He's walking around and pacing. But he's not only pacing, he's looking at things that are, like, because Michael McKean is sitting with his back to
mm-hmm.
Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's looking at, like, he looks at, like, a cord here. And he looks like another string from the ceiling here.
Yeah.
And then Cord, he's looking for something to, like,
strangle him
with.
Yeah.
And it's real subtle. Like, if you're not watching Fisher Stevens do this, it's you know, you would miss it, but it's very subtle the way he's doing it, and it's humorous just because you can just see kind of the wheels turning as he's doing that. I'm sure it was probably ad-libbed, too, because this was just junk sitting around. I'm sure it was just ad-libbed on his part.
But Ben, when with their heart-to-heart, Ben says that I'm in love with Sandy, but Sandy doesn't love me back, right? So
yeah.
So Johnny decides that he's like, oh, I've read poems and novels. I'll help you get Sandy back.
Yeah. And so they agree to do this kind of like Cyrano de Bombayrac kind of routine.
But before that, it cuts to the two crooks eating Chinese at a Chinese restaurant.
Of course.
And talking to their boss, who's out of screenshot. And then, bum, 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 their boss is Jack Weston, or Oscar, who is befriended. So that'll come back. But so Johnny decides that he's going to help Ben with his date with Sandy. And go ahead.
Yeah. They are dressed, by the way. Like they talked about it briefly earlier in the film, but like Johnny Five has like Wi-Fi built in at this point.
Right.
Like, he put in like a radio control device,
which I'm like,
which
okay.
apparently does everything from shut down
buses
to. I don't
remember that from the first movie.
It was new to this one, I think.
Okay.
It was a plot device.
Right.
Electronics.
And I think
so he like shuts down the bus that Sandy is on, and Fisher Stevens happens to be hanging out there, which is not creepy in the least. But she gets off there, and I wrote down at one point, I said, I put, Benny is dressed like Benny from Benny and June, but then when Sandy comes off the bus, she's dressed like June from Benny and June.
I never even thought
of
that.
I was like, okay. So it was like perfect. So, they're doing their whole like, what I was saying, like it's like a Cyrano de Bergerac thing, or Cyrano de Bombayrac,
well,
or whatever.
He gets into the screen up on a big sign, so only what's his face can Fisher Stevens can see it, right?
Yeah, he can read it.
That only he can read it, and so then he decides to write all this love stuff to him, and then you know, go ahead.
And then there's like because it's a little-known fact that cats love robots. So, like, a cat gets on his head and starts playing with the remote or the, like, Wi-Fi piece, which cuts it out, and he starts reciting commercials and things, you know, pretty standard, you know, humor at that point. Starts reciting these, and then he comes back online, then somebody blocks him, and, like, it's just this whole... It's all shtick until... He finally says, just from the heart, that he likes her.
Hmm. Yeah, basically. And so they go on a date. They start drinking and listening to music. And then the next morning, all the 1,000 robots, for some reason, like are built. At no point during this do we see Johnny also working on the robots. Like when he has his adventures.
Yeah, he did out early in the city. On.
Like
he
just already did them.
Well, he worked on a bunch early on. Like, on that first day, he's like, here's 75.
Yeah, that's 75.
And then, like, you know, over the next days, apparently. I mean, he was having a lot of adventures. Although, he doesn't really sleep, so you can... I mean, there's a streak.
Yeah, but at one point, they say he has... Well, I guess he has, like, 500 hours on his battery
and
or something.
He still charges himself up with a power cord.
Right. So the next morning, they have 1,000 robots that they pack up on a truck. Ben comes back. He's had the night of his life. He's smoking, which I think is very odd for some reason.
Yeah.
I've never seen Ben smoke. Maybe he did in the first movie. I can't remember. And then we see Oscar and Johnny outside of the building, and Oscar distracts Johnny Five while both the crooks come in to kidnap Ben and Fred. And take them away. And they lock them in a freezer, right? In the Chinese restaurant?
Yeah. They kidnap them, take them to the car first.
Right.
And then
Oscar convinces Johnny to go into the big tunnel that they've been digging underneath to help them dig further.
Well, they open it, and he's like, here, there's a secret thing down here to take them to. And then Johnny Five runs into his one weakness, which is stairs.
Which is stairs. I saw that too.
Like there's a lot of times Johnny gets through things where I'm like, your tank tread body did not fit through that.
Right. Like, how did that happen? I mean, I know how a Dalek gets on stairs, but right. How does Johnny Five? His kryptonite stairs.
But it was easier for Jack Weston. It was easier for Jack Weston to trick him than it was to trick Audrey Hepburn and Wait Until Dark.
It was. And so he convinces Johnny to help him dig the tunnel, and he's digging fast, fast, fast. He says, hey, this needs to be a hideout for Ben.
It's like somewhere to keep him safe
if the crooks come back. Yeah, that's right. Meanwhile, the crooks have taken Ben and Fred, locked them in a freezer. They're trying to get out, so Ben creates like this Morse code phone thing through Texas Instruments.
It's his touch tone calculator.
Right.
His touch tone calculator comes back into... I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that there's a point that they like made sure it beeped in the beginning.
Right. Makes sense. So he tries to turn it into a speaking spell. It doesn't happen. So he turns it into... So it starts making noise. So they decide to call Sandy up. But obviously, they don't know Morse code. They can't talk on it. So they decided that they're going to play songs.
Yes. They're going to play they're going to play touch tones.
There was this game back in the day called Notability where you like there's a small piano and you hit the buttons that tell you and then your teammates are supposed to guess the song.
Oh, really?
That's what it reminded me of. It's like bim 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 bim.
Yeah.
Bing. So that's what it reminded me of. So he starts playing all like five or six songs to try to tell them.
Yeah, like it's first it's like Help Me Rhonda.
Help Me Rhonda.
And then so that's how she knew they needed help. And then it was, I can't remember what the next one was, but then it was Downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So then they head downtown, and then it's like 16 Candles,
mm-hmm.
and then at the boardwalk?
At Boardwalk or something like that.
Yeah.
Downtown, like, Boardwalk.
Yeah, the docks. Oh, Dock of the Bay, that's what it was.
And Sandy is at home because she thinks that Ben stood her up for their second date. I said that she turned to Taylor Swift or Alanis Morissette because she's just strumming a guitar with headphones on.
Yeah.
Not paying attention. Falls asleep. With the headphones
and
on.
And it looks like she has a creepy statue of herself in the back of the room.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, you want to, it's a decoy.
With a face like Elizabeth Flip-Flop, I would have a statue too.
So they go through all these codes and this like Eastern European Bruno Kirby looking guy who is the cab driver. Who I hope gets his own spinoff one day. They're going.
He was
through.
Like Bruno Kirby.
Yeah, he does.
Like
look
I thought
like Bruno
it was
Kirby, right?
Yeah.
And it gets to the last part of it, and the song is "Doo-Wah Diddy," and they're like, "Oh, I don't know what that means." And then the guy goes, "Look," and he points up, and the place is called Doo-Wah's Chinese Restaurant.
Right.
So it seems like. To me, it seems like the writers were like, I got this great idea for a gag. And so they go through with all the song stuff, and then they couldn't think how to get out of it. So they just were like, you know what? We'll name the Chinese place Doo-Wah's.
Right. So the crooks and Oscar have the diamonds, and they're on the run.
Right.
And Johnny is pissed about that, so he goes and chases them. And he tries to stop them. But the crooks start beating him up. Like, this time, they're better than Johnny Five for some reason.
Yeah, there's no hang gliding out of that for him.
Through Pig Latin and whatever.
Well, Oscar tricks him. But he speaks Pig Latin and says to get behind him. So Johnny Five is focused on Oscar trying to stop him and ask him why, like, he was taking these jewels. Which, by this point, Johnny Five is caught wise as to what's going on.
Yeah.
They
beat Johnny up. Johnny starts to die pretty much.
And this was traumatic. I remember when I saw this when I was a kid, I was like devastated.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh no. And it's gruesome too. Mm-hmm. And he's, they do this whole thing. Like, the first hit they do on him, the guy gets battery acid on his shirt, but of course it's red, so it looks like blood splattered all over him. And then Johnny is begging and pleading for his life. Mm-hmm. And, like, you can see, like, at one point his eyes dilate and get huge, and he's like, please, no. So, it is.
Right. Yeah. So Fred finds him, and he's all kind of broken up. And, we should say that the police have found the tunnel, and Fisher Stevens and Sandy, they have arrested them. But Fred escaped, and so Fred goes looking for Johnny, finds Johnny all beaten up, and says, oh, you need to find Ben. And he says, I can't find Ben. Ben's with the police. So he says, you have to fix me. So, like, how? And he points to a Radio Shack that's like just happens to be right there. And so they go to the Radio Shack. And this is a heartwarming moment with, I think it's actually a good moment with Michael McKean, by the way. It's where he learns his lesson and kind of starts to fix Johnny Five. Johnny Five then is losing battery power. He turns into Rambo, by the way. Right? So where he's like, I'm pissed. I'm going to track down the crooks.
Well, Michael McKean, Fred says,
right.
They locked us up. He goes, wait a minute. They locked you up.
Right.
But they were going to kill me. He's like, so you kill the robot, but the humans are fine. He's mm-hmm. like, no. And all of a sudden, he just goes ape shit. And like, right. We see him get aggressive a couple times where his eyes turn red. And like now it's just like, it's on.
Right, it's on. So he turns into Rambo. Michael McKean's character jumps on the back of Johnny Five. They start chasing the crooks. And at one point, They're chasing him down the streets of fake New York, and then they go into the tunnels, the sewer system to try to like outsmart them, and at one point, then they reach the car of the crooks and he starts controlling him with his Wi-Fi antenna, tricks him that way, crashes their car.
Yeah, he's out for blood at this point.
And the crooks get out of the car, including Oscar. And at one point, Johnny's so crazy, he turns into like Robin Williams. Like, he does like 5 minutes of shtick.
Yeah.
And kind of stops the crooks from going. Wraps one up in a fence. So he's doing that. But Oscar gets away. He steals a boat, but Johnny Five gets on a crane. And Tarzan swings his way to grab Oscar, all while set to the wonderful tune of I Need a Hero.
It's iconic.
It's iconic. It's like a montage of him trying to get him. So he captures Oscar, saves the day, puts him down, but then Johnny Five pretty much has like all of his juices gone. Mm. So they have to like, Ben has to shock Johnny Five back to life with those shock paddles, that the ambulance that I guess they had for a dead robot, which I'm like, what?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you don't know what to do, I guess that's a good guess.
Call the ambulance. So they shock him back to life, and magically he reappears, right?
Yeah.
So end scene, and then now it's a few I want to say, we don't even know how many. Months later.
Yeah, it doesn't say how long later, right. I think.
And Johnny Five is big. He has all this news about how he saved the day, solved crooks. So they start a company, like a toy company. Sandy, Fred, and Ben start a toy company called Input Inc., which I thought was weird. So they start a toy company. Then the last kind of scene is that there's a shot of like... What is that? Where they become citizens? The citizens of the United States.
Yeah, they're taking their citizenship.
Yeah, they're taking their citizenship.
Citizenship. Yeah.
Yeah, all these people are lined up to take their citizenship, and we see Ben, who's there, and he's taking the oath, and then right next to Ben is a new and improved Johnny Five,
and not just any Johnny Five, gold plated.
He is gold plated, and he is wonderful,
and. So the judge then
makes
it a point to say, I also have the special honor of giving our first robot citizen rights and says that he's a robot citizen. But I would like to point out that as a robot citizen, he may have rights, but he still does not have full rights as a robosexual.
No.
He's still missing some of those.
So they ask, Johnny, how do you feel? And he says, I feel alive. And he jumps up, and it's freeze frame, and it's the end of the film for Short Woo. Circuit. So you've been deuced on that one. So there we go. Now we're going to go to our five questions on Short Circuit.
I think before we do that, too, we should talk about what we thought, or what other people maybe thought about that.
Oh,
too.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, there are, of course, lots of people who review these kind of movies and who talk about what's going on. There was a few that we wanted to just take a peek at here. So there was one. So this person, X Maverick, gives this movie a 10 out of 10 in several years ago. Actually, 17 years ago. Gave him a 10 out of 10. Says, it's got humor, crooks, gangs, and graffiti. What more could you ask from a robot movie?
It's true.
This movie really is delightful to watch. It's less dark than the first movie, focusing more on the humor than on the fear of being disassembled. I'm not sure why they changed Ben's last name from the first movie. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did that.
Not racist enough the first
time? Yeah, I guess. not curry face.
Fisher Stevens is still a humor genius with his little quips here and there. I can't believe that he's the same actor from Hackers. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. I even like it more than the first one. I've watched it over 1,000 times. Uh-oh. Sorry, X Maverick. That's painful.
That's about as many robots as they made, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe that's what he was getting
maybe
at.
That's, yeah, he's just watching 1,000 of those robots.
1,000 times for each robot they built.
But then there's a review. Kind of takes an opposite stance from Miyagi's sweaty wife beater. Is the name of
it's a great screen name.
Name of the screen name. Oh god. Anyway, so he says Short Circuit 2 is a bad movie. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But why was this movie made in the first place? I didn't realize that Short Circuit was such a huge success. I mean, it was an okay film, but there was no need for a sequel, especially one that smells like a bag of old bait. Okay. Am I supposed to be bag?
I think so.
Dude, this movie reeks. It's a one-note movie featuring the, quote, East Indian Fisher Stevens and now annoying Johnny Five. Well, this was the 80s, and I guess it was written in the contract that the producers made up during the production of Part 1. If Short Circuit makes a slight profit, we'll shoot the sequel. Well, what may have looked good on paper really looks bad on the screen. Not worth your time unless you really like Johnny Five. Ouch. Bad stuff, best to avoid.
Ouch. I feel like Fred doesn't get enough like criticism and praise.
Yeah, right?
Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, he does.
He's kind of like a lost hero in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. Well, so a couple things I want to point out about Miyagi's sweaty wife beater's comments. That is, I guess it was in the 80s it was written in the contract that the producers made up the, you know, if it gets money, gets a sequel. Dude, that's how all of them work. Do you not understand that shit by now? That, like, that is just how this happens. And it doesn't even have to be, like, you know, I mean, it could have been a flop.
That's why we do this podcast.
Right.
Sweaty wife beater.
Yeah, geez, sweaty wife beater. Miyagi, sweaty wife beater. Yeah, so that's
Those
just a couple
wonderful.
Mixed reviews there. Yeah, you know, you'll have your own. You can definitely weigh in on our Facebook page, you know, as to what you think about that. If you want to join our group, you can definitely talk about it there. But then we have five questions that we like to talk about and see where we stand with this. Brad, what's the best part of the movie?
Johnny Five pretty much is the best part of the movie, I think. Any scene that doesn't have Johnny Five in it is kind of slow, kind of lackluster. These scenes are really short. Like, they're not long scenes that cut through. And any song that is kind of a long, it just doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this needs to be a fast... it kind of needs to be a cartoon, but not a cartoon. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotcha.
So I think that I actually think that Michael McKean is not terrible in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the best, but he's not like, I think he's a great added addition to it. But without Goot in this movie, mm-hmm. it's just not as well as the first movie.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
You know, I think from mine, I think Johnny's like the obvious thing as far as the best part. But I, you know what? I think to me, one of the best parts of this, and it's underrated, I think, is the drama aspect of it.
That's true.
During your dramatic scenes, like, yeah, they have all the comedy and the people mugging and doing whatever. Mm-hmm. But like when they do drama, they really like the actors they have are good at emoting.
Yeah.
And they are good at like really playing that drama. But there's just not enough of it in this movie. So I think it's a great part of the movie. It's just very underrated what they have with it.
I don't think this is a terrible script.
Oh,
I
no,
think
not
it's
at
just,
all.
You know.
Okay. Would you choose to reboot, continue, or cancel the series?
Go ahead. You first.
Honestly, I would continue the series.
I would actually, I agree with you. I think that there's enough nostalgia there for Johnny Five to continue it. I wouldn't necessarily do another movie. I would actually reboot it into maybe a Netflix series or like a streaming series.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like the mini adventures of Johnny Five.
Yeah. Or like a, or just like a, you know, 8 episode season or something like that, a short season and do like different story arcs or
where he solves crimes or does whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And you could mix all these elements in there and mm-hmm. give it enough time to talk about it. And I think that'd give you plenty of opportunities to explore things and not either rush, you know, where we don't understand where the hell that hang glider came from. Like, it fits nowhere.
All that stuff. I'm like, where did that fit in?
I pointed this out a couple times earlier on, but I didn't like talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So he has this piece that comes down that has like a multi-tool thing,
mm-hmm.
and it like comes out of his crotch every time. It just looks like he has like a robot penis that does these amazing things.
Go Gadget penis.
Yeah,
I mean it's Inspector Gadget.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think this movie stands on its own?
Yeah, I think it does. I think I think it's funner than the first movie.
I completely agree.
I don't think it's as well as the first movie.
Yeah,
but it kind of stands on its own, and it, you know, I enjoy it.
I think it can stand on its own, but I think that the writers were almost afraid to let it do that
mm-hmm.
because, especially at the beginning, they kept like reiterating
the exposition.
Yeah,
kind of
like they,
it
and
down
they exposed
the
whole like they did expository dialogue through a good portion of it where they kept referring back to like, oh, but don't forget this is based off the first movie. Like,
yeah, don't forget Gutenberg didn't make this movie, but you know, he was part of it.
Right. Okay. Would you watch the first one?
Yes.
Or watch it again?
Yes.
Absolutely.
It makes me want to watch it.
Yeah, but you know what though? I've seen Short Circuit 2 a billion times, mm-hmm. and like I don't feel like I've seen Short Circuit 1 near as many times.
I
as I
agree.
Have this.
I swear I've seen this movie more.
To me, it's like Terminator and Terminator 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like I see, I could
don't
almost
go
quote,
don't go that far.
Well, I can almost quote Terminator 2, you know, and go through all of that, and then I'm like, oh yeah, Terminator 1. Like I didn't get as much into that as I did Terminator 2, and the same thing here. I think Short Circuit 2 is a much more fun story.
This is more joyous than the first one.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. And so I think that's why, I do want to watch the first one and get mm-hmm. reacquainted with it.
Mm-hmm.
Sum up your experience in two words.
Go ahead.
Well, initially I wanted to say Coke Robot because it's like my question. You know, I always wondered, you know, what would happen if you had a robot that was on cocaine. And you would get Johnny Five. But I more seriously, civil rights.
Civil rights?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, allusion to, like, civil rights in this. With, like, you have a Johnny who just wants to be a person, and Johnny who's being looked at differently, and he's being chased out by, like, the church. He's being, targeted by the police for just being, he's like, I'm just a person, you know? And I think that there's a lot of stuff there. And in the end,
I think you
he
got
wins
more out
of
this movie than I did.
I'm a deep thinker.
That's a deep thinker. Because I would say joyous action. Like, it's because it is. It does flow pretty quickly. Like, this movie doesn't feel like it goes on forever. Like,
agreed.
It's a pretty fast movie. So our last So Hurrah About Johnny Five and Short Circuit 2 would be like a fine movie, holds on its own, and would you say not necessarily better than the sequel, but I don't think it's completely worse than the sequel or than the original. I mean,
no, I would completely agree with you there.
Right. So we give Short Circuit a deuce on that one.
Yes.
And that concludes our second episode of.
So remember, so now you can check us out at the Deuce Podcast at .podbean.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can also find us on Stitcher, Google Play, or Apple iTunes Store. Also check us out on Facebook. We have the Deuce Podcast has a page that you can join and talk about these films and see new ones that are coming out. It'll feed it directly to you.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely get out there and check it out if you enjoy the series. And we look forward to hearing your responses.
All right. And don't forget, the sequel is king. Goodbye, folks.